on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Standings golf. What in the world does that mean? Well, I guess you have to stick around and listen to find out. We'll also chat about Aaron Judge, who is better than you at baseball, and provide you a very lovely good, bad, and ugly, and maybe even make a decision on a six-game sweep. This is Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols should choose the next Pope. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if we're ranking Cardinals, I mean...
Yeah, I think we can give Daniel Descalso a vote as well. I don't know. I haven't checked in on the Pope selection status. But I assume if you're making that joke, it means we still do not have an answer, but surely Albert Pujols, in anticipation of the 2026 World Baseball Classic, has other things to do.
When you're in the conclave, baby, every Sunday is Selection Sunday.
Well said. On this Friday edition, Baseball Barbacast, we are so excited to bring back a game we introduced last year. We're going to call it Standings Golf, and we're going to explain how that works here momentarily. I'm excited to do this game again. I'm also not excited to do it because it's difficult. And it is a situation where we have to expose our ball predicting knowledge. But you know what? I think this is a good time to do it. So why don't we get right into it?
I would rather do this than golf, which played honestly one round in my entire life. Yeah. And it was not fun. And as an ADHD riddled individual, a game of patience is not for me, and that's why I podcast for a living and ride my bike for a hobby. So here's how this dumb game works. We'll call it Standings Golf because we are trying to score as few points as possible. Every team right now is somewhere in the standings of their own division. First, second, third, fourth, fifth. Okay? Think of that number. First, second, third, fourth, fifth. As like a point total. What we're going to try and do is pick teams that we think are going to stay where they are between now and the end of the year. For instance, I presume that the Colorado Rockies will be the first pick of this draft. No spoilers. It's like the Bryce Harper draft. We know who it's going to be.
Right. And Rockies we've known for a while.
And we've known for a while. The Rockies are in fifth place in the NL West. If they finish the season in fifth place in the NL West, whoever takes the Rockies will receive 0 points. Zero. If the Rockies, by the grace of an almighty power, end up in fourth, they will receive 1 point, third, two, you know math, so on and so forth. When we did this last year, Jordan beat me by 3 points. Mm. 8-11. The difference was the final pick of the draft, where I took the fourth place Houston Astros over the fourth place Minnesota Twins. I believed more in the Astros than the Twins as a good baseball team.
No, other way around.
Less. Yeah. I believed less in the Astros than the Twins.
Yes. Well, that pick was you saying you thought it was more likely the Astros were going to finish in fourth or closer to fourth than the Twins. And ultimately, because the Astros won the division, that was 3 points for Jake, which is about it. That's whatever, double bogey, triple bogey, however you want to call it. Whereas big the
old,
Twins.
A big old bogey.
Whereas the Twins, they did finish in fourth place. And so I ended up with 0 points with my last pick. But besides that one, like it was really close. Like we did a pretty good job last year. Generally, as this goes on, we will be picking teams that are giving us at least 1 point. But you want to avoid the multi-pointers. Now, the point of doing this all to begin with, by the way, is that it's May. And we can it's going to be May. Luis May also called up. Thank you, Reds. Amazing. But this is a time to do this because no longer can we say, oh, it's April. Yeah. It's May. So we can't just dismiss it as April. However, it is still very early in the season. And it's still early enough in the season that when we look at the standings, we're like, how much do we buy that, right? Is this really how this season is going to end with Team X in X place? And so this is our way, our convoluted way of expressing how much we believe in the standings at the beginning of May with much baseball in front of us. And so that's how we're going to do this. So again, last year I narrowly won. And by the way, we're going to have some pretty similar picks, I imagine, early on as we did last year when the fifth place White Sox, Rockies, and Marlins were the first three picks taken. But anyway, we will move through this fairly quickly and we'll see how this goes. So again, we're doing this, of course, based on the standings of this Friday morning. Fortunately, we do not have any ties right now. I know technically the Astros and A's are two games back of Seattle, but we're going to consider the Astros as in second place as they have the higher winning percentage at the moment. So any other caveats before we get started?
To decide who picks first, Jordan, pop quiz. Who leads baseball in stolen bases? If you get it right, you get to pick first. And if you get it wrong, I get to pick first. It's like knockout.
Okay. My guess is I'm also fine with you getting the first pick because you lost last year. O'Neill Cruz?
O'Neill Cruz is second. Luis Robert Jr. and Ellie De La Cruz are tied with 13. So you had two correct
Luis
answers.
Luis Robert? Holy crap. I had no clue. All right. Good there for you. Him. Go. Okay. Okay. Well, you have the first pick now. We're just going to straight alternate. So not, you know, stupid one person snake draft. So, or two person snake draft. So go ahead, Jake. Again, I think we know these first picks are going to be, but why don't you start us off?
I am proud to select, honored, humbled, even the Colorado Rockies of Colorado.
Yep. And I will take the White Sox pretty easily. Hey, nice little win. You just mentioned Luis Robert. It kind of smacked the Brewers around in that series finale. They don't look quite as embarrassing. I mean, they're still really bad and they're going to finish last, which is why I'm picking them, but they're not, you know, Rockies are worse.
And
they won
the
last
Rockies,
night too, to be fair.
On a W-2?
First win streak of the season. First
is
win streak
two
of the season.
Streak? I don't think two is a streak to me.
Okay. First two, it's the first time they've won consecutive games. Whether you call it a streak or not, it is the first time that has happened. But either way, those are clearly our first two picks. So back to
Raise
you.
The banner. I will now take the Miami Marlins with my next pick. The Marlins, I will say, are better than we thought. At least they have looked better than we thought. Really rough road trip for them. But they are not the worst team in baseball.
No, they are not. Okay, so am I going to continue with last place teams? I think I am. I think I'm going to go with the Angels here.
Okay.
More Angels discussion later during the good, the bad, and the ugly. See if you
I wonder
can
what
guess
they'll
which
be
segment they will fall under there. But I will keep it short here, and I will take the last place Angels. I believe they will finish in last.
Okay. I am now going. So it's interesting because when we did this last year, there was a lot more confidence in the teams at the top of various divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year, for whatever reason, all the division leaders, I feel less convicted, I feel less like sure of myself. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm not going to be too complicated and I'm just going to take the Dodgers to win the National League West.
Okay. That's fine. They would have been one of my next few picks, but that's fine. I'm going to keep it. You know what? I'll match your positivity here.
Sure.
And just double down on a positive prediction from the start of the season. And I will take the Cubs. I'm going to take the Cubs. I am going to do that. They have some flaws, but this is more a commentary on the rest of the division. Maybe it's a little early there. There were some other bad teams I easily could have taken here, but I'm going to take the Cubs. I'll match your Dodgers pick here.
So the Cubs are really, this is what's awesome about the beginning of the season. The story's been like, the Cubs are, oh my God, the Cubs are great. And like, they've been exciting. They're two games up on the Reds.
Yeah. Dodgers are one and a half up on the Padres.
Yeah, but they're famous. All right. My next pick arguably could have been the first pick in the draft. And that is the Washington Nationals to finish fourth in the NL East.
Yep.
Where they belong.
That was probably the safer pick. Even more than maybe the Dodgers, but certainly more than the Cubs, and that's fine.
Again, the Nats don't, they're like incrementally better than last year.
Yeah, but I mean, they're rolling out one of the worst bullpens we've seen in years. So that
and
alone
the gap
is going to keep them.
Between them and Mets, Phillies, Braves feels significant.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good pick. I then will just, I mean, I got to do it. I mean, I guess maybe there's a version where they play up and squeak into fourth, but I'll stick with the Pirates here, man. I think I have to. Again, that's another one where it's like, you know, show me whatever. They finished fourth or fifth however many years in a row. Like, they would really be bucking recent trends to get up to third and dock me with 2 points. So maybe the Cardinals bottom out and I end up with a point. But I still think that's one of the safest picks on the board left.
No American League East teams selected yet, and I'm going to keep that going by taking the Minnesota Twins to finish in fourth place in the American League Central
last year.
These fraudulent cowards sunk my battleship last year, and I will now punish them for doing so. I don't like watching the Twins. I love Rocco Baldelli very much, but I do not watch the Twins. They're the American League Pirates in how I think about them.
Interesting. All right. So now we're into some interesting territories here. I think next up, I'm looking at some second place teams right now.
Love that for you.
That's really where I'm kind of zeroing in. And I think I'm going to take the Cleveland Guardians.
Okay. Why?
I think that the Tigers have done enough to where I feel like they're better than the Guardians. However, it is not inconceivable to me that the Guardians will finish first or third. If this is 1 point, that's fine. I do not envision a scenario where they are fourth at all. There are still some other picks on the board here where I could see multiple points being received, and that scares me, so I'm going to go with Cleveland.
I am going to select a division leader now.
Okay.
I'm going to take the New York Mets.
Okay.
I think the Mets are better than the Phillies and the Braves.
Mm. All right.
It is one of the things I feel better about now than what I did on opening day. And I think the reason for that is twofold. One, the Braves dug such a preposterous hole for themselves. And while they have done a great job climbing out of it, I have so many questions about the bottom of that lineup, whether it's, you know, like Jared Kelenic and Brian De La Cruz, which was the plan on opening day. Neither of them are on the active roster. Kelenic's at AAA, and De La Cruz, I think, just got claimed by the Yankees. And so I know Verdugo's been a boost, and I just, the bottom of that lineup doesn't have the sauce for me. And then Philly's bullpen is bad. It's a bad bullpen. And
bad bullpen. It's certainly a bullpen that's pitching badly.
So it's not a good bullpen.
Yeah.
And so I think that the Mets just have fewer obvious flaws moving forward, and I really like their depth. I think right now they will win the NL East.
So this puts me in an interesting position because I was looking at the NL East for my next pick, and between the Phillies and the Braves, like the Phillies again, maybe they finish in second, maybe that's 0 points. But it's like, do I believe in the Braves finishing third more than I believe in the Phillies maybe finishing first or third? And I think the answer is yes. I know that's confusing. I think I am going to take Atlanta here third.
Because I'm not sure. By your sentence. Yeah.
Okay, well, what I'm taking Atlanta third. I'm taking Atlanta with my next pick here.
Thank you.
I think I'm not sure. I am not convinced that the Mets are. I still think the Phillies could win the division. But I'm pretty convinced that the Braves won't. And I think that's where I'm at. And maybe they finish second, but I don't see Atlanta getting back up to the top. And I think there's a decent chance because of the flaws that they end up stuck in third. So I'm gonna stick with them there.
I'm just gonna take the safe pick and take the Phillies now because the Phillies will not finish fourth.
Yep.
Right.
That's fine.
So they will either finish first, second, or third. That's a good pick.
And that's where we're at now, which is how can we avoid multiple points? And at this point, I'm going to take the Tigers. In first.
They won again.
That leaves only two Tigers did win again.
Okay.
The Angels sure helped out, but the Tigers continued to win, which was nice because the Pistons season is over, sadly. Back to you.
Ha!
So we're about halfway home here. a little under halfway home. We've both selected seven teams.
I'm going to take the New York Yankees. Time? I'm going to take the New York Yankees.
All right.
Sounds the good. Yankees have been helped so far this season by what has been a bizarre and frankly messy American League East. Whenever one of these teams gets hot for a week, you're like, oh, and then they just have a series of embarrassing losses right after that. Boston's inability to get out of their own way. I just think the Yankees have Aaron Judge. I'm pretty sure they do.
We'll and talk none about of the other later.
Teams have Aaron Judge.
That's true. It's a quality analysis. Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Padres in second place here.
Sure.
You know, I wrote about the NL West this week, kind of talked about the big question for each team. And again, that Padres depth kind of scares the crap out of me. But when they're rolling, they were right there at the end of the year last year to push the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have enough problems right now that it certainly would be improbable for anyone else to end up winning this division. But I definitely still feel good about San Diego as one of the higher ceilings in all of baseball. And I think they're going to finish second. So I'm going with them. So we have, just to be clear, we have four AL West teams and four AL East teams still on the board.
I'm going to take neither. I'm going to take the Kansas City Royals, who are currently in third in the AL Central.
Yeah. That's the right.
They're hot right now.
That's what I would have done. Yeah, they've won 9 of 10, I believe. Run differential still in the negatives. And Bobby Witt Jr. is still kind of the only thing going well for them.
Did he have a 22-game hitting streak?
22-game hitting streak, which is a career high. Vinny's heating up, so we like to see that. And the pitching's good. Our guy Chris Bubich, I assume, will throw this weekend at some point, which is exciting because now Bobby Witt Jr., friend.
By the way, is going to have another historic runner-up MVP season. Like he...
he might.
Judge is going to win AL MVP, probably again. And Bobby Witt's going to put up like an 8.5 win season.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing he can do.
Yeah. Rolls and third is a great pick. That would have been my next pick.
If you finish second in the MVP award for like 5 straight years, you should just get one. You could trade your second places in.
You it's round like when you up. Go I mean, to this the, is kind of this is kind of what whack-a-mole. MVP shares are. Like if you look at that, like they can add up to.
Sure.
I mean, this is like Jose Ramirez, right? Has done this about as well as anybody, and Chris Sale before he won with Cy Youngs.
You know, you play whack-a-mole, and like if you get 4 of the medium prize, you can trade up to the large. Yeah. That's what I'm.
Yes. Thinking. All right. So again, now where we're at, it's like think about it this way. If you're looking at the standings and the teams we still haven't picked, what we're saying is there's a chance that these teams will move multiple spots from where they currently are. That's kind of what we're scared of at this point.
Yeah.
With that being said, I'm going to take the Red Sox. I'm here in Boston. Okay. They had a horrific last 48 hours, but I picked them to win the division. I believe you did too. And I don't think... I feel good about them not falling to fourth or fifth. So if I end up with 1 point, so be it. If they finish second, that's totally realistic. I'll take Boston here.
I'm going to take the San Francisco Giants, who are currently in third place in the NL West. I don't think the Giants can win the division.
Yeah, so same kind of thing. Yeah,
and I don't think the Giants can finish below the Rockies.
Yep. At least so that's how we're playing this.
Can you imagine? Like, they're currently, I believe, 12.5 games up on the Rockies already. The Giants are.
We should note, by the way, hey, they just lost to the Rockies last night. That's the Rockies. We've been wondering how many division games are they going to win.
That's one.
So Giants 0-1 against the Rockies. So tough start, but that's fine. I agree with you. I think that's still a smart pick.
Dude, I'm sorry. It is May 2nd and the Dodgers are 15 up on the Rockies. That's incredible.
All right, so here's where we're going to make some tough choices. Once again, I am going to go the safer route and take the Astros in second place.
Sure.
Same kind of thing. Don't think they'll finish fourth. So am I still picking them to win the division? Yes, I will until it doesn't happen. Maybe the Mariners hang on. Maybe the A's win the division and Russ Dorsey looks like a genius.
No way.
But I am going to take Houston. That feels like, I think, the safest pick left.
Speaking of looking picks, like a genius.
But, yeah.
Hunter Brown, Jake Mintz's Cy Young pick.
That is, I mean, real sexy.
1.22 ERA through six starts. He's been freaking believable. The thing about this Astros team right now, they have called up more dudes I've never heard of to eat bullpen innings than I can remember. Logan Van Wey.
Yeah.
Bennett Sousa, Ryan Gusto.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, shouts out AJ Blueball, though. I know he lost this week, but
Honey
cool
King.
To see him in the big leagues. Yeah, the Honey King. All right. Oh, you're up. It's your pick.
Jake Mintz, your pal, your buddy, will take the Toronto Blue Jays, who are currently fourth in the American League East.
Okay. All right.
It's been better than maybe we thought.
Yeah.
The Red Sox bullpen has helped. Jeff Hoffman is the best reliever on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Vladdy's heating up.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Bichette has not hit a home run, I believe, since last May.
Yeah, so he's coming up hitting, on the 1 year in it, but he's still hitting. That's what's so weird.
Well, no. Because, I mean, he's hitting 293, but it is an empty 293. It's like a league average line.
He has like,
in its entirety. I mean, it's a 695 OPS.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too picky considering he was a pumpkin last year. I just remain skeptical in the bottom of this lineup. And so if they finish, I just don't think they'll finish second. And so that's third, fourth, or fifth. That's not a bad thing for me.
So okay, man, this is, now we're getting into some difficult territory. Because last year, you got burned by the Cardinals, who, in kind of goofy fashion, ended up finishing in second place as bad
people
as
forget
last
that.
Year via tiebreaker or whatever. So with that in mind, I think I'll just go the homer pick and take the Mariners first.
You know what else is going to get burned by the Cardinals?
What?
The smoke that rises up during Pope. Selection
Thank
day.
Thank you. More Pope callbacks. Selection day, yes. I'll take Seattle and just hope they finish in the top two, but I don't know. We're at a difficult part of the draft here. So where are you going next?
I'm going to take the Arizona Diamondbacks, who I have been a non-believer in. They are in fourth place right now in the NL West. I think they're just going to finish in third. Like I think the division, when it's all said and done, will be Dodgers, Padres, Diamondbacks, Giants, let's go Rockies. And so, am I worried about them finishing in second? Sure, I am. But I've been the low guy on them, mostly because I think the starting pitching is overrated. And I'm going to stick to that.
So I'm going to go with the A's here, I think. Because I do see they're in third place right now.
Okay.
And again, this is a situation where I see them finishing in third or fourth, not fifth because of the Angels. That feels better than picking against the Rangers, who maybe finish in second, and that's 2 points. So I'm going to go with the A's in third here.
Okay. And they've been better than...
Yeah. Again, the overall pitching numbers still don't look good. And are still why I assume they're not going to finish in third place, but it's one of the more fun lineups to watch in baseball. So
sure. I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Rays, who are in third.
Damn, that was yeah.
And the Probably reason I'm going
take
to
that next.
The reason I'm going to do that is because when a team's in third, it's harder to get burned because you only get 2 points. I know that's a boring answer. But the AL East just freaks me out. I think they can finish it a lot of different ways, and I don't like anything else left on the board.
Okay. Man, oh, man. All right. So, again, five teams left on the board. Orioles in fifth, Rangers in fourth, Reds in second, Brewers in third, Cardinals in fourth. So, three NL Central teams. So, basically what we are saying is, we are scared of the Reds finishing in fourth or fifth. We're scared of the Brewers finishing in first. We're scared of the Cardinals finishing in second, I guess. But talking through that... Sounds like I'm going to take the Cardinals in fourth. And while I don't think they're that bad, I also still think that the general plan for this season is not going to lead them towards like up the standings too high. So, and honestly, unlike last year, I think that these other teams, the Reds and the Brewers, are going to be too good for them to accidentally finish in second. So I think that's the best way to put it. So I will take St. Louis.
I will take the fifth place Baltimore Orioles, who won their second series of the year this week, beating the Yankees, although not by aggregate runs scored, getting mollywopped in game two, but eking out wins in games one and three. I remain worried about the pitching plan moving forward. I don't think they will finish in last, but I do not think that they will win the division. I did not pick them to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I have had no reason to change my mind on that so far this season. Right. If you look at American League records, they have the same one as the Angels. I know it's early.
Don't like that.
Look, I know it's early and it's been a slow start. Guess what? Those games count too. So.
Yep. All right. I'm going to take the Brewers here in third. And the reason I'm going to do that is because I have already picked the Cubs finishing first very early. So that is me expressing my confidence that the Cubs will win this division. So even though we don't want to discount Milwaukee that much, consider this another one where I feel like the maximum is going to be 1 point. Maybe they finish in second. Maybe they finish in fourth. Don't think they're finishing in last. Don't think they're winning the division. And when you consider these last two options, I'm actually very curious who you go with here. Again, the last two options here, Jake is picking between the Rangers in fourth or the Reds in second.
So I'm going to take the Reds in second. And I'm going to take the Reds in second because they will not finish in fifth.
Okay.
I do not think they'll finish in fifth because there's a team in the NL Central we're not allowed to talk about on this podcast called the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I don't think the Reds are worse than them. I just don't. I do think that the Rangers could still win the AL West. They've looked ugly this season, sluggish, but they're still only three games out. And like that lineup is talented enough and there's enough zest on the pitching side that they could just still win the division. So that scares me. So I'm going to take the Reds in second place, which means you have the Rangers in fourth.
All right. So Rangers in fourth, I will take. And yeah, I think that logic is pretty solid. I don't know. The Rangers are a really, really tough one to figure out. And when they look good, it's like, yeah, how about this? DeGrom finally looked awesome earlier this week. But for the most part, it has not been especially pretty, especially on offense. More on the Rangers later. All right, there we go. We did it. Standings golf has been completed. Standings Golf, is that a good name for this game? Let us know, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will keep an eye on this. Let us know if we had any stupid picks here, but hopefully you enjoyed this game as a vehicle for us to discuss the standings. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return on Baseball Barbacast, we talk about this Aaron Judge fella who's having a nice little season. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. You and I technically lived through Barry Bonds. But we didn't, though, because we were children. Without internet connections or ways to watch Barry Bonds besides Stuart Scott highlights in the morning. And we look back on that era of baseballing dominance with a sense of nostalgia because it was in some ways inaccessible to us. Aaron Judge right now is basically doing that. And because we are watching it every day, literally me, like in person down the street, it hasn't hit me for a while or yet that what Judge is doing is generally not exactly what Bonds was doing, but it is Bondsian. And so for the next 10 minutes, we just wanted to shower Aaron Judge with the appreciation and attention his 162-game stretch of brilliance deserves.
Yeah, and you wrote about this because that 162 games is kind of goofy and arbitrary. It's like, well, why are we doing this right now? And it is because it aligns very conveniently with how his season began last year, which was poorly. And so last April was really the last time in the regular season, we should of course note, that Aaron Judge has looked bad. And since then, as we know, he went on to win MVP again with another outrageous season. And this year, he has looked even better in April as opposed to getting off to a cold start, which puts him now with this hot start. When you pull up the Baseball Reference page, now we are looking at three seasons, you know, with an OPS plus over 200, over 250 as we record this on Friday morning. And because of that, him leading the league in not just WAR and home runs, he's hitting 427. He has the most hits in Major League Baseball, right? So this version that we're seeing of this year has elevated another degree to where, you know, he's got a career low strikeout rate. Right? And we should get into the strikeouts and the comps with Judge and Bonds here in a second. But to your point, it's not that this is new, but because he has somehow managed to ascend to an even higher level, even in this small sample, combined with the fact that we now have this very tangible baseball norms sample of 162 games of him being essentially as good as any player has ever been, it is enough of a reason to take a pause and be like, oh, hold on a second. We got to zoom way out and start talking about really what we're watching.
Okay, so 162 game samples. Over the last 162 games, Judge has an OPS of 1268, all right? With a 369 batting average, a 494 on base, and a 774 slug with 64 home runs. It is the best 162 game stretch since Barry Bonds in 2004, okay? Here are the players who have done this over a season's worth of time. Aaron Judge, Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, Babe Ruth. That's it. That's it. Right? That's the group of hitters that Judge is at. I think in our world of social media hyperbole, we'll often say, this is the GOAT, Santiago. This guy is a legend. Can you believe it? What he's doing is unprecedented. And because we see that every day, and because Shohei Ohtani is still the best player in baseball when he pitches, mm-hmm. And because Judge, the whole narrative forever will be, if he doesn't win a ring, that he never won a ring and he dropped the fly ball and he was bad in the playoffs and all that stuff, right? He's still doing something that we've basically never seen. Judge, Ruth, Williams, Bonds. Judge, Ruth, Williams, Bonds. Judge, Ruth, Babe, Ruth, Williams, Ted, Barry Bonds. That's it.
And I think what's so special about it is when he has his season in 2022, when he hits 62 home runs, age 30, right? You're like, this is it. Aaron Judge's incredible career has been building towards this moment.
Sure.
This once-in-a-lifetime season. And clearly that put him into the inner circle of best players in the league. Of course, maybe the best player in the league, right? At the time. But it was like, I mean, he's probably not doing that again. Like, he's probably going to settle in to 40 to 50 home runs and, you know, 1,000 OPS. And, you know, in 2023... we sort of thought that that's what we were watching, and injuries contributed to that. He finished 15th in MVP. He was awesome. He was awesome. Really good. Yes. One of the best hitters in baseball, maybe the best hitter in baseball, okay? But it was not because of the injuries. And just in general, I mean, whatever, he hit 267. It did not feel like we were watching a continuation of a stretch that is one of the greatest in the history of the sport. And then last year happened. And then now the start of this year happened, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, hold on. That is what we're watching. This was not one season of a lifetime. This was a part of a chapter in a player's story that is
beyond really anything that anyone could have possibly imagined, even when he hit 52 home runs as a rookie, even when he hit 62 home runs in 2022. And that is why I think it is worth a further acknowledgement.
You mentioned the trajectory of Judge's career, and I think it's very interesting, okay? Where he's comes up in 16 at age 24, and he's bad. Full season at 17, rookie of the year, 52 homers, second in the MVP. And then from 2018 to 2021, he is a very good hitter. 147 OPS plus, he's averaging 42 homers per 162 games, 100 RBIs. Like, he's,
I mean, this is elite. I mean, it is better than very elite. Good, but it didn't feel historic at all.
Oh, it was, this is a good player. And if he does this for another 10 years, he'll finish like up on the ballot, some votes, not a Hall of
Famer. He's also striking out a ton.
And because Judge debuted at a relatively advanced age, okay, that changed, that made it more difficult for him to compile a Hall of Fame career. But now we're at a point where unless he falls on the banana peel or gets space jammed, this dude is going to be in Cooperstown. He is at 54.4 career baseball reference war. He has 325 home runs. His career OPS plus is 176. He's a career OPS above 1,000. Now, that will dwindle as he gets old, presumably. That happens, right? The career numbers on the rate stuff go down
Pujols,
as you decline.
You know, Pujols was sitting up there, and then he kept playing, and it, you know, slowly trickled down.
The Pujolsian descent. But the number of players who debuted that late and made the
Did
Hall
not
of
happen
fame,
with Bonds, by the way, as we know.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
The number of players who debuted, I guess he debuted at 24. Like, even that is kind of late.
Oh, yeah.
For a Hall of Famer, right? Sure. If you look at, here's a list, okay? This is Hall of Famers, non-pitchers, to debut at 24 or later. Ichiro, Edgar Martinez, Kirby Puckett, Wade Boggs. Then you have to go pre-integration. Earl Averill, wow. Earl Combs, okay. Yeah. Dave Bancroft. Like, dudes that we don't know, right?
Sure.
So again, I just want to say this stat one more time. Debut, 24 or older. Position player in the Hall of Fame. Ichiro, Edgar, Puckett, Boggs.
It's also such a great way to, a great thing to arrive at talking about after, remember when he won Rookie of the Year, there was like, so old. He's 25. He's not a real rookie, you know? And I mean, of course he's a real rookie. But now to like have this stretch in his 30s to kind of remind us that he is an all-time great is pretty cool.
And I feel humbled that I get to be around it and watch it every day. And every time Aaron Boone is asked about it, he just kind of laughs. He's like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I've stopped putting things past this guy. And every time Judge is asked about it, he says, you know, it's not about results. It's about the process. And I think that answer is boring. We agree, right? It's a boring answer. Yeah. It's about the process. It's also a true answer. It's also a real answer. Because when you're Aaron Judge and your abilities and your process have created this, well, of course it's you're going to stay married to the process, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what Aaron Judge is supposed to say. Like, I'm the GOAT. I can't be stopped or topped, right?
No. And I think that, well, it's interesting because I know some people are still going to be like, well, what about the playoffs? And as we transition this back to kind of talking about Bonds, which I want to do as we wrap this discussion, you know, Judge, he's had some playoff moments, but we know that on the whole, it has not necessarily been what we expected. That was true for Bonds also earlier in his career before he had one of the greatest postseasons of all time in 2002. But I also know that for Judge, especially after last year, like he wants to win a World Series, like duh, especially being on the Yankees, like that's really the only thing he's going to care about. But let's stick back on the process. Let's talk about the way that he's doing it, right? Because you can tell me those numbers over 162 games, whether you're measuring it by OPS plus or WRC plus or OPS or WAR. And we know that it's a very, very, very small group of players that have done this. I think comparing it to Bonds is interesting. And I would love to hear from people that Giants fans that were watching Bonds on a daily basis to kind of talk about it and who are now watching baseball or watching Judge frequently enough to understand what it feels like to watch a player like this. Like, what are you expecting? Why? What is so viscerally impressive, aesthetically impressive? And the point that I've always made about Judge that is just so obvious because it's been the whole thing about him since he was at Fresno State is that he's gigantic. He's huge. He's bigger than all the other baseball players.
He's so big.
And so
big,
when
dude.
He so when he is dominating, it looks like, I've said this before, it looks like he's playing on a field that's too small for him. That's kind of how it's looked like for a while now. It looked like you put a adult in a little league field. That is when Judge is hitting home runs, not just the far ones, but when he's kind of like flicking them over the fence, it's like he's too big for these major league stadiums. That is the aesthetic that is presented.
There was a moment in the Wednesday Orioles-Yankees game that I want to kind of leave people with when you talk about what's it like to watch this type of player.
Yeah.
Anthony Volpe walks to start the top of the eighth. And on the Orioles broadcaster Kevin Brown says, if another base runner reaches, Aaron Judge will come up in the ninth. Okay. Six hitters away. And so in that, and I guarantee you, Brian Baker is thinking that too. And Brandon Hyde, the O's manager, is thinking that too, that you then have Wells, Bellinger, Dominguez, Peraza, Goldschmidt, Grisham with Judge hitting third. And you're like, if one more guy reaches, like we have to face Judge with a runner maybe on in the ninth. And like, then they get Wells, Bellinger, Dominguez in order. And then you have Felix Bautista out there with Peraza, Goldschmidt, Grisham. And it's like, if any of these guys reaches, Judge is up in a one-run game with a chance. Like that fear that even if Judge, if you get him, right, you get him to pop out or strike out or whatever, he's eight away.
Yeah, you're right still away. Thinking about the next time.
He's eight away right away, you know? Right. And like
yeah.
That to me, that fear, that intimidation, that's what feels the Bonziest to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And again, I would love to hear from people that watch him more regularly. As from statistically, like the last point I would make, I think that obviously Bonds' home run surge came in one season. We know that he has the most ever. But from a single season standpoint, Judge has already had multiple seasons with more home runs than, you know, having multiple 58 homer seasons is more than Bonds ever did, right? However, the difference is, of course, the walks. And I am fascinated to start to understand why it is that Judge is actually walking less than ever this year. Or at least less than recently, also striking out less. But that's the ultimate difference. And whether it makes Bonds a objectively better player or not, you can say the fact that he was striking out basically half as often as Aaron Judge and walking, you know, that much more. What is that? Does that say more about Bonds? Does that say more about the era? Does that say more about Judge? Like, I don't know. You could say all these things. We know that on a production basis and on being that much better than your competition, Judge is at that level. That's what OPS plus and WRC plus is telling us. He is that much better than his peers in the way that Bonds was. It's not made up of the exact same stats, but that's why we're having this conversation, because he has managed to produce at a degree, make an impact at a degree, not to mention the fact that he also has been again, we know what happened in the postseason last year, but like a plus defender. Right, Bonds was not a plus defender for this stretch of when he was this level of offensive player. He was not this kind of defender. So, again, people will compare. I totally understand that people say no one will ever be as good of a hitter as Bonds. That's totally a realistic take. Duh. But in terms of what is being produced when he's swinging the bat, Judge has managed to actually make it a conversation, which is amazing.
When the ball hits the bat, you could argue that Judge is better.
Sure.
Yeah. You could. I don't think you can argue the rest.
The process, the full, right. The whole experience and like the entirety of Bonds as a hitter is tough to deny.
Bonds had one season over 50 homers. Judge already has three and certainly feels like he's going to get to four this year. Yeah. But again, then you look at the walks, right? Okay, so Judge's best walk season was 133 walks last year. Barry Bonds got over 133 walks six times.
So, no, I know. And I guess that's the last thing is just like,
well, sorry, one more thing. Barry Bonds had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 100 walk seasons. Judge has three.
I still am not totally understanding why he's getting pitched to as often as he is. No, but again, the answer is that because he'll strike out still. You know, right now it's at a league average, or he's now finally below league average for the first time. But that's, I think it makes people think they can get him in a way that with Bonds, it was like, it is not worth our time to even try and get three strikes past him. So, which again, that speaks to a difference in how the hitters are respected and considered by their peers. But from a performance and production standpoint, I think that that's fair. All right, you got one more Bonds one before we go to break?
I mean, this is the nuttiest Bonds stat is 120 intentional walks.
But that's the thing. So Judge, again, the most intentional walks Judge has had in a season was last year, which was 20. So anyway. All right, Aaron
Judge, I love that we had this conversation to like pump up Aaron Judge.
No, but it's...
And then you're just like, you look at the walks.
Yeah, and you're like, well, what do you do with that? I know you paused earlier and like... Aaron Judge is on bases 480. What it's like? Well, it's not
494.
Six. It's not 600. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we return, you know what time it is. It's the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. It's Friday. Got to get down on Friday. Time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing ugly from the week. That was Mr. Schusterman. Let it eat.
We had another umpire perfect game, courtesy of Nick Lentz, home plate umpire for the Rays and Royals earlier this week. Called all 130, how many pitches was it? 136, I think. Sorry, 129 pitches called correctly. Now, this is relevant to a story that Ken Rosenthal and a bunch of his colleagues at The Athletic put up this morning about how the league has changed the degree to which they are kind of evaluating umpires. There used to be a 2-inch buffer zone outside of the strike zone by, you know, league rule book that if umpires called pitches those as strikes, they would not be ruled as objectively wrong. Whereas now they have shrunk that buffer zone. And in turn, it does appear that the umps are just way more locked in than before, which is fascinating. And I mean, it's a really interesting story that I encourage people to go read. And like, this is probably worth a longer conversation. But to me, like the fact that we now have already had multiple umpire perfect games, you know, courtesy of ump scorecards in a month into the season when we'd only had one in the last 6 or 7 years, you know, Pat Hoberg in the World Series, we've had a lot of other 99%. Like, it tells me that the umps are, one, we now know that they're being evaluated more stringently. And two, if they think their robot overlords are coming to take their jobs, they're like, no, screw off. I can call balls and strikes as well as you, as anyone. And so far, it seems like they actually have been way better, which is pretty cool. So I'm intrigued to see which guys are scared into being that much better. Like which umps have a huge leap in accuracy because now they realize like, oh, wait a minute, they might take this away from me. So Nick Lentz, cheers to you.
All right. The population of Gwinnett County, Georgia, according to Wikipedia, is 942,627. One of those residents right now is a gentleman named Craig Kimbrell.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Kimbrell is on the comeback trail. Great article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution by Gabe Burns about Kimbrell's road back. Remember, he was in the second half last year a pitching machine that couldn't find this. It was like you aimed a pitching machine outside the strike zone, which you don't do. 2 years ago, he was an all-star with the Phillies, who got a save in the All-Star game by striking out Jose Ramirez. People forget that.
I definitely forgot that. No recollection of him pitching in the All-Star game.
Got the save in a one-run game. This is the Elias Diaz game. Anyway.
Oh, true. Good times.
Kimbrel is not done. Kimbrel could be done. And this is why this isn't good. He is in Gwinnett in AAA, working back up. He had a back-to-back last week. He's throwing fine. Bump here or there, nothing wild. He will almost certainly join the Braves at some point this year, considering their bullpen is so understaffed. Kimbrel doesn't even see this as like a farewell tour. And this is kind of the crux of Burns' article. He said he thinks he's got juice left. And this is why this is good. Maybe it is delusion, right? Craig Kimbrel could sit on the couch and he could probably be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's one of the 10 greatest relievers of all time.
Yep.
Dominant, historic. But he wants to keep going. And as someone who played baseball until someone told me that I literally was not good enough anymore, I tip my hat to a legend of the sport willing to do the same thing, right? Kimbrel is not what he once was, but he wants to squeeze every last little drop out of his remaining ability, and I give him kudos for that. He was embarrassing last year, right? It was an embarrassment. Yeah. He's running back out
really
there,
bad.
He's running back out there. And like, maybe that's bonkers and maybe he should get a hobby that isn't pitching. But I admire Craig Kimbrel.
Here's the thing, man. He was terrible last year. And you know what else he did? Strike out 31% of the hitters he faced and save the same number of games that he did in 2023. So like, there really aren't actually enough signs, especially when you talk about reliever sample sizes, to tell him that he's done. If he was throwing 91, yeah, he'd probably
good
be
sign.
Done. But he's still throwing. And by the way, if he doesn't see it as some comeback homecoming tour, that's fine. But him pitching for the Braves again is
be cool
really
sell.
Cool. You know, like, his run with them, you know, his last year with them was 2014. I mean, that four-year run is essentially the reliever equivalent of the Bonds 01 to 04. You know, I understand, okay, Mariano Rivera did it for 20 years. Sure, that's fine. You look at this four-year stretch that he had with the Braves, and I don't think any reliever has really ever done anything like that over that small period of time. So
he struck out 436 people in 268 innings.
Yeah, with a 1.51. So, Craig Kimbrel, that is cool. It is funny that now you're like, oh, Craig Kimbrel, when he doesn't have a -1 war with the Orioles. But it's just valid. Speaking of negative war, my bad this week, it's the Angels. This is just so bleak. They have lost, I think, 6 in a row. Their loss last night was so just insulting on so many levels. They had defensive miscues. Honestly, what's most bad, I mean, the two things I'm putting it into bad of is not just the Angels losing a bunch of games. Mike Trout's hurt again. That's a bummer, obviously. They say, it's not serious. And maybe it isn't, but it's also a reminder that, like, not every Mike Trout injury it was going to be season ending. It's just like, well, yeah, like when you have this many injuries, you're just going to be more liable to end up having knee soreness that you have to go on the IL with. So that sucks, of course. But what they've done to Reed Detmers is just a travesty. It is just an absolute travesty. They made him throw twice this week in relief in consecutive games, and it's like, or I guess back-to-back nights, which I don't believe he's ever done as a pitcher. Again, this is after his disaster season last year. They're like, all right, maybe we'll move you in the bullpen. And it's been terrible. And he gives up 5 runs against the Mariners, and then they throw him back out there the next day. He gives up 4 more runs against the Tigers. Like, what are we doing? Like, this is a talented left-handed pitcher who you have fumbled to a degree that is just so shameful and disappointing. And I'm sure there are plenty of other teams that are like, we'll take Reed Detmers. But now it's just gotten so bad, it just bums me out. So I don't know, man. They suck, and they are so bad, and they're going to be last place again. That's why I picked them so early earlier. So
bad, I thought you were going to say bad Mike Trout on the IL, bad.
I mean, I mentioned that Mike Trout's hurt again. He's on the IL. Yeah, that's bad. But
that's
the Detmers thing is like more emblematic of how many things they're screwing up right now than Mike Trout continuing to be hurt. So, yeah, bad.
What do you remember about the 2002 World Cup?
Okay, so, I mean, presumably that would have been the first World Cup that, you know, I was cognizant of. That's not the Zidane headbutt. That's 06, right?
Correct. I would say that one of the most important things about that World Cup is a picture that I just sent you. And that is Ronaldo's haircut. No, not Cristiano Ronaldo, but Brazilian Ronaldo, who played the 2002 World Cup with a haircut. Just Google it, my friends. It's like a semicircle of hair at the front of his head in like a buzz cut. And then the rest of his head is shaved. It is one of the most preposterous haircuts of all time. It is really not a thing you see on normal human beings ever in the world. And yet, in baseball, we have a competitor. Mets designated hitter and outfielder Starling Marte is giving Ronaldo a run for his money, except he is doing it at the back and not at the front. A picture this week.
Which is an important distinction, we should say.
It's just the back. I want to say, I noticed this about 2 weeks ago in the Mets locker room, and I asked Anthony Tacoma, like, what the hell is that thing? And he was like, I don't know, go ask him. I was like, I don't want to. That seems rude. Marte has a spot of hair about the size of a hand, like a palm, on the back of his neck, and the rest is shaved. Now, this spot of hair is large enough that it is not a mistake or an accident, okay?
Clearly intentional.
There are lines shaved into this spot of hair, and it is lined up on the bottom. And you can see it when he has his hat or his helmet on. So when he's wearing a hat or a helmet, it looks like he's got full head of hair, right?
Which I guess is the point.
It's the equivalent of a clip-on tie, but for your hair. Go look at this up. We will
retweet it's great.
It is a preposterous hairdo. Yeah. And it is bad. I don't like to, you know, make fun of other people's appearances. This one
that's fine.
Is a choice, and it is a bad choice.
I think this could have been an ugly too, but I'm wearing my Escogido hat. I think he had a little bit more hair when Starling Marte was playing for Escogido. How do the Escogido fans feel about this? Because it's reflection of them too. I just Googled this Ronaldo thing. I found this on Reddit. This headline says, Ronaldo apologizes for his 2002 haircut. Quote, it was horrible. I say sorry for all the mothers around that time.
Well, because kids started copying.
I understand that's a translation. That was not him speaking in English, but still. I just love the line, apologizes for 2002 haircut. Do you want apology from Starling Marte? Like, I don't understand.
No, because he's not. Kids aren't doing this as a result. Like, no kid watching the Mets is like, I want Starling Marte's haircut. They want Lindbergh's haircut.
That's true. If he was raking, this would be more problematic. But also, everyone would be like, oh, it's Starling Marte. He's awesome. Mets, go Mets. But it's like, dude, you're like the least productive player on the team right now. All right. Ugla. My Ugla is also a good. It's a call-up. The Rangers are calling up Blaine Crim.
Oh, Blaine Crim.
Blaine Crim, who also, I believe, played for Escogido. I know he was in winter ball. Also a Puerto Rican winter league. Blaine Crim has been called up because Jake Berger has been no bueno. That bums me out. So Jake Berger's going to AAA. That really bums me out. But I'm a big fan of Blaine Crim. And this is just ugly because anytime someone gets called up, it's not just like, oh, he's been in the minors for so long. It's being in AAA for multiple seasons without being called up is something that I just think about all the time as a dynamic that fascinates me. Because presumably when you are getting into professional baseball and you're climbing the minor league ladder, and if you're not a top prospect, you don't know exactly when you're going to call up. But when you get to AAA, your first thing you think is like, all right, phone call away. I'm right there. Just takes an injury. Just takes this. And for the players that play in AAA for multiple seasons and don't ever get called up, which does happen, is like, it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around. And Blaine Krim, who's now in his, I guess, almost fourth season in AAA, to finally get the call here is very cool. Now, he's not like 35 or anything. Like, it probably was going to happen at some point. Awesome story. Like, he was a Division II player, like, not a prospect. When you have this first base type, you're never expecting much. But he's generally always hit. And whether he succeeds in the big leagues or not, it just, the guys that are in AAA forever and never get the call, it just, like, breaks my heart. So I'm glad he's getting coming up. Blaine Krim.
The Krim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. There you go.
Nicely done.
Thank you. My Ugla is a bizarre coincidence that I tweeted about. Yesterday, yeah. The Dodgers made a roster move. Okay. Two, in fact, four moves. If you want to be technical about it. They moved Michael Kopech and Blake Treinen to the 60-day injured list. That is not good. The Dodgers are looking down the barrel of more injuries. The two gentlemen that they added to replace Kopech and Treinen are J.P. Fireisen, who they claimed off waivers from the Arizona Diamondbacks, and Ryan Lutis, a pitcher with the St. Louis Cardinals in AAA. They acquired him for cash considerations. Now, why am I telling you this about J.P. Fireisen and Ryan Lutis? Well, both of these dudes played for my college coach, Pat Bloom. They are both Division III players from small schools. They were drafted, or I guess in Lutis's case, signed as an undrafted free agent, 7 years apart. They, I assume, have never met before. And that the Dodgers added these two dudes on the exact same day is so odd. Fireisen went to the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, where my coach Pat Bloom had him. He also had Jordan Zimmerman. And then Ryan Lutis went to WashU, where I played. He was a freshman the year after I graduated. This is weird. This is just so small world, like, odd coincidence, ugly as hell, that Fireisen and Lutis, I believe, two of the four players that to make the big leagues that my coach coached alongside Caleb Durbin and Jordan Zimmerman. Like,
yeah,
same day.
It is same just team. Great because, right, like, especially for Fireisen, who's bounced around a bunch of teams, anytime a roster move involving J.P. Fireisen happens, like, he was the... I know Jordan Zimmerman was the first one, but, you know, since we've been doing this and gotten to know J.P. a little bit, like, seeing his journey, like, every time he shows up in a transaction, it's like, oh, like, still going. Found another team, you know, so. And to see that combined with Lutis in the same press release, let alone amazing. For the Dodgers, is extremely ugly. I agree. But very cool. It does appear like both of them will be in AAA. But we know the Dodgers are going to keep churning through arms. So I imagine we will probably see both. I mean, Fireisen's been on the Dodgers before, by the way. So he's just going back there. But Lutis, it'd be nice to see him back in the big leagues.
Before we get out of here, we have an announcement. We received your emails and your feedback for the 6-game minor league sweep, as well as the 2-game minor league sweep. Two-game sweep, I guess. For the 2-gamer, quickly, I think the three that stood out were wipe, dust, and brush. I think we're going to stick with dust or dusting.
Yep.
There was one emailer who said that dusting could be adding dust to something rather than removing dust from something. I would say, given the context here, usually if you say, hey, can you dust that?
Yeah.
You dust it off, maybe. Right. But no one is adding dust to things as a activity, though I guess you technically could. So a 2-gamer is a dusting. They got dusted. Simple as. For the 6-gamer, 3 suggestions stood above the rest. Scrub, fumigation, and power wash. Okay? A lot of people emailed in favor of fumigation as a pest-specific term.
Yeah.
That you are removing your opponents who are pests. Power wash, well, we asked for one-word ones. Alden Gonzalez of ESPN, thanks for listening, my dude. He texted me and said, it's obviously power wash.
Yeah.
Good
power
feedback.
Power wash feels really strong. But I do really like the one-syllable ones.
I love scrub, too. Okay.
Yeah. I like your point when we talked about this in terms of, like, really getting after it and, like, having to, like, put some work in.
Where are you at?
I think that that's fair.
We have not discussed this yet.
Yeah. I'm right between. I think power wash evokes a more, more of what we're getting at, I think, in terms of like increasing the power of what you have accomplished from sweep to mop to power wash. But also like power wash, I'm not even really sure. Like, what am I visualizing?
Do you power wash an indoor floor?
That's what I'm kind of struggling with. So I don't know. I could be swayed both ways.
For that reason, I would like to get rid of power wash.
Okay.
Because dust, sweep, mop are things that you do in your home to the floor. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, do you fumigate your floor?
No. See, this is where I think bleach re-enters the conversation.
But, I agree. But you can't just bleach any floor. Right?
Bro, I don't know.
And this is why I come back to scrub. Now, I do like how outrageous fumigation is. You know? Because it's like...
It is pretty funny.
A six gamer, I mean, they fumigated him.
Yeah.
Got fumigated.
Again, yeah. The thing is like this would feel a lot more higher stakes if we were talking about this in major league context.
Sure.
Minor league sweeps are good, but it's just like it's not. There's so many of these series going. Literally every series is a six game series. That's the other thing. It makes it impressive that you could do it. But part of why the mop is special is because it doesn't. Not only do teams not complete it, the four game series in general are an endangered species. So that's part of it. So again, I don't want to take it away. Like people who like these are minor league broadcasters should have the say for this, as far as I'm concerned. So
yeah, those are the people. I don't want to make the decision yet. I'm gonna keep kicking the can down the road. Minor league broadcasters. Okay.
I know Jesse in Lansing, like we have minor league broadcasters listening. Like, let us know.
Your three options: scrub, fumigate, power wash. Let us know. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, Baseball Barbiecast. Thank you for listening. Email us, baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com. Thank you to TJ. This is Boissieu for producing this episode. Thank you all for listening. Have a sensational weekend. Anything else, Jordan?
No, we're done. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Goodbye.